like to call this meeting to order. Commissioner Studley?
Here.
Commissioner Ward?
Here.
Commissioner Hahn?
Here.
Commissioner Liu?
Here.
The only item on the agenda is consideration of the waiver request by Mr. Schumacher. Mr. St. Croix, would you like to introduce this item?
As staff has stated in its recommendation and at the prior meeting on this agenda item, we believe that sufficient hardship exists in this case and that potential conflicts of interest have been properly vetted in a public document that warrants the grant of this waiver to Mr. Schumacher, who is here to represent himself. And if he's got any comments to add, this would be a time for him to come up and address the commission.
Thank you, commissioners. Thank you for the opportunity to address the full commission. I really appreciate you rescheduling on my behalf. When I was here 2 weeks ago, so my name is Doug Shoemaker. When I was here 2 weeks ago, I feel like I didn't do a very good job of explaining either the contracts or the specific limits on my employment opportunities, so I appreciate the opportunity to also respond to those issues. I spent a lot of time talking to the city attorney and trying to understand the nature of the conflict of interest laws as they relate to this case. And while I'm not the experts that you are, I did want to just start by saying, you know, in my position, I've never used or attempted to use my position in any way to kind of gain future employment or affect in any way the hiring decisions of anyone associated with this work. I know that's one of the major intents of the law, and I just feel like it's important to state that, you know, there's no aspect of what I've done that is in all related to that. I came to the mayor's office really with the unique goal of advancing the work that I do in affordable housing, which is a rather small but important work that, you know, we do to try and provide more affordable housing, particularly for very low and low-income households here in the city. And that's really been the intent of my work here. And what I hope to do when I leave is to go back into that field. There are obviously other lines of work that people who do real estate development could do. But for me, what I've done for all of the 15 or 16 years that I've been a professional has been this work. And it's really my sincere desire to go back and keep doing that work. I do not want to go do other work. This is really what I believe in and feel sincerely that is what I want to keep doing in the future. I think it might be helpful, just in light of the comments from last time, to just talk a little bit about the contracts. And I think a couple of questions were raised last time that I wasn't really well prepared to answer. I hope the additional written information that I provided is helpful. I want to just sort of provide two overarching thoughts about the contracts themselves. In my office, or in our office, I play two kind of distinct roles as it relates to contracts. One, which I would describe as kind of loosely ministerial, although not probably technically within law, I'm not a lawyer, is loans and grants that are approved by other bodies or approved by the Board of Supervisors or whatever it may be, come to me, and I sign as to form and content for the mayor. There's obviously a huge gradation in between there. And on the other end of that spectrum are loans and grants that I play an active role in. I'm involved in the decision making. I play a role in selecting who it is that's going to do the development or receive the grant. And of the five contracts that I've signed with Mercy Housing, I would say three are on the side of real active participation. And two, realistically, I played a very minor role. I was not involved in the decision making process. I was not involved in the loan committee. The grants came to me or loans came to me at the end of the process, and I signed off on them before they went to the mayor so that he could be assured that the content and form was appropriate for what he was going to sign. And I'm happy to answer more questions about that. On both of those two loans, they were also either approved subsequently or prior to my signing them by the Board of Supervisors as well as the mayor. So that's just by way of background. I thought that might be helpful just in terms of understanding the role. I understand that it is nonetheless part of the waiver process. That doesn't change the fact that I need to solicit a waiver for that, but I thought it might be helpful to understand the nature of my involvement. And also because I think they address one of the key purposes of the ordinance, which again is to ensure that I'm not using my position in any ways that's unethical or attempting to enrich myself. And I think hopefully that the transparency in the public process associated with those loans and grants makes that more clear. Secondly, and I guess most importantly, in regard to the hardship provision, as when I came last time, I sort of spoke generally, and I provided, I think, considerably more content this time in terms of information. As I said in the letter, and I think I mentioned last time in my testimony, I know I signed, over 175 loans and grants a year. I signed many more documents than that, but in terms of contracts, at least 175. In past years, I've signed upwards of 250. In the past 12 months, I've signed 5 with Mercy Housing California. During that same time, I'd say there are about 15 affordable housing developers active in San Francisco that have done any work in the last 3 to 5 years. In that time, the last 12 months, I've signed contracts with 14 of them. 9 of them I've signed multiple contracts with, and I mention that because I think one of the questions that was asked was, isn't it unusual to have multiple contracts? In fact, for 6 of these affordable housing developers, I've signed 3 or more contracts. So I say that by way of just explaining that this is sort of the nature of the world that affordable housing inhabits and that I play a role in as the director. I've mentioned, and I think there are people here to talk a little bit about this if you have questions for others about sort of employment opportunities in my field. Again, it's an amazing world for me, I think, the world of affordable nonprofit housing, but it is very small. It is not one, there aren't literally, you know, nonprofit housing organizations on every corner. I know, and this was, I think, asked at the last meeting, you know, have you been aware of other employment opportunities in the last year or other years that you might have considered? And I have known of 4, and all 4 of them had the exact same conflict of interest issues. In other words, I've signed contracts with them within the last 12 months, in fact, multiple contracts with each of them in the last 12 months. And 2 of those had internal hires, or one of them, I'm sorry, had an internal hire as the end result of their process. You know, in closing, and I don't want to repeat everything that's in the letter, I would just say to you, I deeply believe in what I do. I feel strongly that the work that I've done for the city has been important work for the city and move this field forward. I want to go back and keep doing affordable housing development work outside of government. It's something I believe passionately in. My wife works here at San Francisco General. We live here. I've got 2 kids in school. I don't want to leave San Francisco, and I don't want to leave the work that I do. And I would just ask that, I hope that you will consider those aspects in consideration of my waiver. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Shoemaker, for your comments. Do any of the members of the commission have questions for Mr. Shoemaker?
Thank you.
Thank you. Comments from the commissioners?
Sure. I think that we shouldn't take waivers lightly. I definitely agree with that. I do think there's a bit of a balancing test that has to be done between the purpose of the conflict of interest code and the rights of an individual to pursue employment. And I think that the government code has a bit of a built-in balancing test in the exception itself, and the implementing regulations govern what we can consider to be extreme hardship. I mean, the code itself has a built-in exception for extreme hardship. And I believe that Mr. Shoemaker has demonstrated that he meets the criteria based on the factors that are in the implementing regulations, namely that he's in a very narrow field of affordable housing of nonprofit organizations, and that there is a very small range of employers who he could possibly work for outside of the government. It sounds like virtually all of these employers would have the same conflict of interest issue and waiver issue. So we'd be right back here with any of the other employers if he had other employment opportunities to pursue. So for those reasons, I think a waiver in these particular circumstances would be warranted.
I would just add to that that based on all the information that we've been given, Mr. Shoemaker is completely hamstrung if he wants to pursue and further his career. And I don't think that that is the intent of the law. And it's certainly, I don't believe, my role to, in a sense, play God with somebody's life and career about what they should do. And in this particular case, I think he has amply demonstrated that there is a hardship. And beyond that, I would say this is exactly the kind of family we want to keep in the city. And if the only alternative for him is to leave San Francisco or even leave California to seek other career pursuits, I think that would be a terrible loss for the city of San Francisco. We already know that we're losing families and children. So I fully feel that we should approve the waiver and allow him to move over to Mercy Corporation.
I as well take seriously the voter-approved standards, and I wasn't here last time, so I am looking forward to hearing any public comment before we take our vote. But I agree with Commissioner Liu that the balance that we need to strike is already part of the standard. I respect that the voters set a very serious standard, which is served by the kind of pre-departure behavior. It says you can't do this, and if you wanted to, you would have to come before us in a public forum to seek a waiver, at which time anybody could say, you know, I think there was some steering, there was some favoritism, it doesn't look good. So that compulsion to have this review before any waiver creates the kind of sunshine and sets a standard with a limited exception that makes me comfortable even considering a waiver and then applying the regulatory standard. We already set a very high bar for public employees, and we expect a lot of them in carrying out their responsibilities. And I think it's our responsibility to achieve that balance in a way that both satisfies the ethical expectations that we have and the limits on public employees, but doesn't do it so rigidly or in a way that deters people from considering public employment or adds more than the voters expected us to the limitations, restrictions, and responsibilities on those people. So on the application of the facts, I would like to hear the public, but this is a case of thinking about what is it the voters expect and what are we entitled to do on giving waivers so that we don't undercut the expectation by doing it too liberally, but we do allow it to happen in a way that serves their expectation.
I don't have anything to add. I'd only be repeating what others have said and probably not as well.
I doubt that last part, but your views are understood. My struggle here is with respect to how extreme the hardship has to be, and I am very sympathetic to the comments made by my fellow commissioners because I do understand the consequence of what we're doing here. It's unclear to me that it is a clear dichotomy between Mr. Shoemaker leaving the city or getting this waiver, in the sense that my understanding is that he would still have his job, his current position, even if this waiver were denied. That being said, I do understand when we're considering waivers such as this that it seems to me that it can't be that what the voters intended was necessarily that you would have to be on the brink of losing your job before extreme hardship were to be met. So therein lies my struggle. But I'm also interested in hearing public comment on this. So unless there are further comments, I'd like to invite the public, any public comment that there is on this matter.
May I ask how long we have?
3 minutes.
3 minutes. And if someone could let me know when I have a minute left, I'd appreciate it. My name is Ray Hartz, Director of San Francisco Open Government, and I'm not going to refer to it today, but I would like to just note the issuance of the civil grand jury report called San Francisco's Ethics Commission, the Sleeping Watchdog. And I do that for a perfect reason. Bottom line is, number one, I think it's really unusual that this disappeared off the regular meeting agenda, and here we are 2 weeks later having a special meeting to have a special consideration of a special exemption. And that's what I see it as, clear and plain. And very frankly, those laws exist for a reason. They are there to protect the citizens of the city and county of San Francisco. Now, Mr. Shoemaker has been with the mayor's office of housing for a long time, so he knows how the plumbing works. He knows who to talk to. He knows what the objectives are. He knows who in City Hall to talk to get the vote he needs on the city council and so forth. I'm really concerned about some of the things that he's participated in so far just in the organization that he's going to work with. $1.725 million, $4.1 million, $175,000, $15 million, $78,000, and they didn't look at him any more kindly because all of these got approved on his watch. And he may say, oh, I didn't have anything to do with it, but everybody knows. Everybody knows. He's the head of the major offers of housing, and he's the one who's telling everybody, okay, take care of this, and
oh, by the way, make sure you have an alarm.
And very frankly, I think this would be just a slap in the face of the citizens of this city to take someone and move them into a position such as this. Mr. Shoemaker has been with the city for a long time. He knows what the law is. As has been mentioned already, he's not losing his job. And he knew this restriction was there. And it was something that, as an intelligent person, he must have committed some thought to. And to simply go and say, well, because he's decided he wants this job, that we should just go ahead and ignore the reasons that it's there. Very frankly, if he goes over there, he is still going to know people in the department. He's going to know who to call. He's going to know who to meet with and who to talk to. And most importantly, he's going to know all of the ins and outs, all of the little things that the department wants to do so that they can say exactly the right things to meet the criteria. And when somebody puts in a request for a bid, one of the things they have to do is try to match up what the department needs with what they can present. And if you know exactly what the department's looking for, well, guess what will show up in the request for a proposal? Exactly what the city needs. And I think that would be unfair to every other agency who is competing in these hard times for the same pot of money. To do this would be just wrong, and I think it gives a bad appearance that it's a special meeting to do it.
Good afternoon, Commissioners. Thomas Piccarello, Tenderloin resident. I concur with the previous speaker that you need to put the grand jury report on your agenda next month, as soon as you can. It's a very scathing report. You need to either rebut the positions by the grand jury or change your ways. Let me just speak to this measure. The request by Mr. Shoemaker is exactly what the public wanted to preclude when they enacted the government code. Secondly, Mr. Shoemaker has the burden of establishing extreme hardship. Not just hardship, but extreme hardship. I'm disappointed that none of you asked Mr. Shoemaker additional questions, such as, what was his relationship with Mercy Housing in the entire 5 years that he was in the mayor's office of housing? Not just the past 12 months. Perhaps there were $100 million contracts to Mercy Housing the year before. You see, those are relevant facts that you didn't ask him. The fact that his wife's a doctor, and she works at San Francisco General Hospital, and Mr. Shoemaker perhaps may have to go to Walnut Creek or the East Bay, is not an extreme hardship. So he has not overcome the burden of extreme hardship. And I urge you to deny his request. If you allow him to go work for Mercy Housing, you have really vitiated the entire section that the voters passed for good government. Thank you.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Commissioners, for the opportunity to be here. I'm Diane Spaulding. I'm the executive director of an organization called NPH, which is the Nonprofit Housing Association of Northern California. I have been there almost 20 years. I am also a resident of San Francisco, so I voted for this process. I think I'm in a unique position because of my tenure in my organization and because of what I do representing all of the affordable housing developers throughout the Bay Area to comment on this waiver for Douglas Shoemaker, and I actually encourage you to approve it. I did submit a letter. I hope you have it. I won't repeat what I said in my letter. I'll just add a few more points. I don't think it takes an economist to recognize that the last 2 years has been a really horrible economic situation for pretty much all of us, and it's been particularly acute for those in the housing market and in the affordable housing market. One major developer in San Francisco, one of my members, went out of business during this time frame. We are in a protracted period of contraction in our field. We are not in a growth mode, and I certainly don't anticipate that we're going to be growing any new affordable housing developers in the near future. One large, well-known regional developer recently made a series of deep layoffs and other staffing cuts. They did this so that they could stay alive, they could stay competitive, they could be more sustainable, and they could continue to build affordable housing for low and extremely low-income people in our city. In my 20 years at NPH, I have seen a lot of job seekers. I've seen a lot more recently, both those trying to enter the field and those who've been laid off, and they're all contacting our organization for help. Today, our government at the state level is poised to adopt a budget with deep cuts. Embedded in that budget are provisions to eliminate redevelopment agencies in the state of California. And it may be a little-known fact that local redevelopment agencies is the most local source that is used by organizations to build affordable housing, and we are on the precipice here of losing that local funding source, which just further compounds the ability of affordable housing developers to do their work and certainly impedes the employment opportunities in this field. I think it's important to note that there are a limited number of nonprofit affordable housing developers in our region and in San Francisco. The leadership in these positions, I'm an example myself. I used to have blonde hair. You know, you stay in these jobs for 20, 30. We have one executive director, Gordon Chin from Chinatown Community Development Corporation. He is about ready to retire. He is the founding executive director, and he has been with that organization for I believe 35 years. So these positions of president or executive directors of these organizations, they rarely turn over. And when they do, almost always they go to internal candidates, not to external candidates like Douglas Shoemaker. The Mercy Housing position is one that's well known to me. It is a rare opportunity.
Ma'am, your time is...
All right, I'm almost done. Doug's uniquely qualified for this position. His career arc has prepared him for this senior executive level position, and that's exactly what the Mercy position requires. It really needs a young, experienced executive at the helm like Douglas Shoemaker. So I would really urge you to approve this waiver on his behalf. I do believe it is extreme hardship if you don't.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair. If we have questions for the witnesses, would you like us to wait till all of them have spoken or do it as they speak?
I think it'd probably be more efficient to do it as they speak.
Okay. I do have a question for Ms. Spaulding. Thank you, sir. I apologize. Yeah. If you could just, I believe you mentioned this in your letter, but if you could just give us a quick sense of whether the agencies in your organization are San Francisco specific or the proportions, San Francisco specific, Bay Area or regional or multi-focused,
sure,
or statewide?
Okay. We are a membership organization, and we are a broad-based Big Tent organization, and we cover the full nine Bay Area counties. We have planners that are members of NPH. We have architects. We have community development banks. We have the full spectrum of all of the individuals and organizations that are needed to build affordable housing. When it comes to affordable housing, nonprofit affordable housing developers, the number is about 60 for the entire entire nine Bay Area counties. Mr. Shoemaker cited a figure of 15 for San Francisco. I am sure that he included special needs affordable housing developers in that and really small kind of mom and pop shops. When I count that number for San Francisco, we consider capacity as an indicator of you know, your ability to produce housing. So the number is really more around nine. There is a concentration of affordable housing developers in the three large urban centers, so Oakland, San Francisco, San Jose, and then there are a few, you know, throughout the other, you know, six counties in the region. But it actually is a small field, particularly when you want to work for a nonprofit organization. So I hope that was responsive to your question.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is John Stewart. I'm with the John Stewart Company here in San Francisco. We have for the last 30 years been involved in affordable housing. Currently we're building Hunter's View out in the Hunter's Point area, 800 units, and shortly a couple of other projects here in the city. I've known Doug for some time. In fact, I supported his ascendancy to this role when Matt Franklin left, who also went to a nonprofit. I know Doug as a person of high competence in an area where, which is arcane at best, requiring specialized knowledge. It's not as if you would leave this job and suddenly become a candlestick maker. I'm sorry to see him go. I think the city is losing an immense resource, but I'm happy to see him go to Mercy. Full disclosure, I was on the Mercy board for about 6 years. That's Mercy Housing out of Denver, but they also oversaw San Francisco. He's going to work for a very good organization. I think they are of the highest integrity. They do good work in the inner city, I think almost unparalleled. Our company has worked with, 25 different nonprofits throughout the state. We have 30,000 units, five offices. So we've seen a lot of people in the kind of position that Doug is in. He knows how sausage is made. One of the speakers here said that he might have an unfair advantage because he knows what the regs are. I would think it's just the opposite. I'm glad to see that he would understand what the labyrinth is in going through the various regs that one has to go through. I don't mean just at the city level, but putting together a transaction these days is perforce 10, 15 different sources of financing. Doug understands that. He will be working for, vis-a-vis our company, a competitor. That's fine. I think he's a person of high integrity. I do not think he should be impugned. And I'm hoping that your organization will exercise good judgment. I know it's a judgment call, and you have your regulations, and they're based on some good premises. But I think in the case of Doug, you're losing a good man. He's going to a good organization. And if we could find somebody with half the knowledge that he has replacing him, I'd be ecstatic.
Good afternoon. I'm Tim Colon with the San Francisco Housing Action Coalition. We're a membership-based organization. We're a fiscal project of Greenbelt Alliance, and our mission is smart growth, transit-oriented development, and more solutions for housing affordability. I think, to us, Doug Shoemaker's leaving Mo is an incalculable loss to the city. He's hugely qualified and competent at what he does. Mercy is one of the members of our coalition. They're one of the best in the business. They do terrific work. They do essential work producing desperately needed affordable housing for people that don't have the resources. It's never been tougher, never been more difficult. I have to take exception to some of the comments made earlier as if this Doug is leaving the city and walking into a cash cow. If you had any idea how difficult it is in the best of circumstances to deliver affordable housing, and believe me, these aren't the best of circumstances. It's impossible right now to deliver anything close to what we need. You'd understand that Mercy's tremendously lucky to get someone like Doug. He is scrupulously honest and forthright He's always been absolutely the a person of integrity and balanced and accessible in all of our dealings with him. Mercy is tremendously lucky to have him. And I don't see a single civic purpose advanced by delaying this. Mercy needs to get on with its business, and this is a terrible time to be trying to do what they do. And you would be doing affordable housing in general a great benefit by moving Doug Shoemaker along. I hope you'll consider this. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Commission. My name is Chris Block, and I'm the CEO of the American Leadership Forum. And by way of identification, I'm also the chair of the Citizens Commission on Community Development, not here in that official capacity. But I tell you that because I think it does give me a little bit of perspective. I was also in the affordable housing business for 20 years as a nonprofit executive director. And because of that perspective, I do believe that this would be an extreme hardship. There are a limited number of these jobs available. And because I believe it would be an extreme hardship, I believe it would also have a detrimental impact on the city if you don't grant this waiver. Because I believe that the consequence of this would be that it would be very difficult, if not impossible, for nonprofit leaders who have dedicated their lives to building and financing affordable housing would have a very difficult time accepting this position in the future. And the consequence of that would mean that we would have to almost, by virtue of the decision, exclude the people that in most cases might be most effective in the position. It means that we would have to really err on the side of hiring bankers and for-profit developers. That doesn't mean that there aren't times when bankers and for-profit developers would be well-suited to this job. But it means that we were forced into taking bankers or for-profit developers at the exclusion of nonprofit leaders. That would be really detrimental to doing this work, which by its nature is particularly difficult and complex. So I would urge you to grant this hardship waiver, not only because it's the right thing for the individual involved, but because it's the right thing in this particular case for the work that we're trying to do in the city and county of San Francisco. So thank you very much. I appreciate the opportunity to come before you this afternoon.
Hi, I'm Anna Yee. I'm here to offer my perspective wearing four hats. I'm a native longtime San Franciscan, native San Franciscan. I've chosen to raise my family here. I have two kids. I also worked in the Mayor's Office of Community Development. When I left, I was the deputy director there, and so very familiar with the public process there and the review processes there. I'm also an attorney, attorney, and I advise frequently on conflict issues. I also now currently, and this is probably the smallest hat I wear, I currently work at Chinatown Community Development Center as a deputy director there. I've been there about 2 years. Doug didn't ask me to come. He wouldn't ask me to come because he isn't that kind of a guy. What I have to say is as a affordable houser, knowing that Doug is going to a competitor of ours, I'm not concerned about that. I know that Mercy is a strong organization, and so is CCDC. I know that the process out there for reviewing projects has multiple layers of review and scrutiny, and so I'm not concerned. I'm happy that he may be going over to Mercy. Mercy is a great organization, and they need someone strong like Doug. And both have stellar reputations. You know, my experience while I was at the city, I went in as a skeptic, as a community advocate, as an attorney. Did I really want to go into bureaucracy? And I think public service and bureaucracy scares away a lot of people. And so I want to. My eyes were open there because you can do a lot of positive work inside government. You can build a lot of transparency and open processes. While I was at Mayor's Office of Community Development. Multiple public review processes through the Board of Supervisors, through public hearings, through neighborhood meetings. The Citizens Committee would review, staff would review, and very far down at the end of the road, the director is there really to sign off after the. What literally happens is the city attorney comes by with a stack of signed off contracts, and it's a stack this high, and the director signs off them. So if that's what Doug did, that's not the real participation or influence you're talking about. When I was looking at this, I asked, well, really, in terms of undue influence or unfair influence, what did he really change? What are the outcomes that you can point to that he changed? You know, I looked at your hearing last 2 weeks ago. I reviewed the letters and I looked through them, and knowing the business, I don't see that he changed any of the outcomes. And so, you know, either you end it today and you approve it, or hopefully you continue to look through, not hopefully, but if you decide to look through, see what did he unfairly influence then. And I don't think you're going to find anything. As an attorney, you know, and as a public servant, you know, the perception of undue influence was always important. I would have to say there that he excused himself from Mercy decision-making. He immediately informed his supervisor. And lastly, this is my biggest hit as a native San Franciscan. I was really pleased to hear that you asked questions at the last hearing, and when you weren't convinced or you weren't sure, that you asked for another hearing. You know, that's the kind of thing that I want to see as a native San Franciscan. The fact that you're trying to balance this and setting a high bar, I appreciate.
Ma'am,
but
I'm sorry, we need to wrap it up.
So the most important thing, I think, is in finding this balance, you really need to think about how do you attract talented people to the city.
Thank you.
My name is Rita O'Flynn. I wanted to thank you all for giving me an opportunity to weigh in on this. There's been a lot of emotional testimony here, and but I just think we need to get back to basics and talk about the fact that the question in front of the Ethics Commission today is whether Doug Shoemaker should be exempt from the requirements of the San Francisco Charter. It's as simple as that. The San Francisco Charter clearly states that employment of a city employee with an entity with which said city employee has had financial interactions is conditionally prohibited. Doesn't mean he can never work for them. There are conditions that need to be met in order for Mr. Shoemaker to achieve his career goals. These charter provisions were well thought out, extensively deliberated, and finally established as necessary to prevent actual and or perceived improprieties on the part of city employees that could taint and compromise the integrity of the city and counties of San Francisco's contracting process. Mr. Shoemaker really needs to prove two things to this committee: non-conflict of interest and extreme hardship. And the proof that Mr. Shoemaker needs to provide has to be data and established facts, not unsubstantiated statements and glowing letters of support from the mayor and other entities funded by the mayor's Office of Housing. The standards here simply must be higher. Let's look at this a little deeper. Conflict of interest. In his original waiver of the 16th of May, request for rate waiver on the 16th of May, Mr. Shoemaker states, "I have approved 5 contracts to Mercy Housing California in the past year. These grants total over $21 million in a single 12-month period to his future employer, Mercy Housing." Following his initial failure to secure waiver from this committee, Mr. Shoemaker submitted a letter to the committee on the 22nd of June in which he attempts to distance himself and minimize any perception of conflict of interest by distancing himself from 2 of the 5 contracts. However, he does admit to being the responsible party executing these 2 contracts as well as the remaining 3 of the total of 5. Whether or not Mr. Shoemaker was negotiating with Mercy Hospital when these contracts was approved is irrelevant. They were approved by Mr. Shoemaker within the past 12 months, and as such, he cannot immediately accept a position with Mercy Housing. This is just the type of conflict of interest that the San Francisco Charter specifically intended to address, a grantee hiring a grantor, and one which this committee needs to consider seriously. As to extreme hardship, Mr. Shoemaker's hardship, as stated in his letter of June 22nd, compared to those of other city employees who have lost their jobs due to budget cuts, just doesn't seem to measure up. Mr. Shoemaker's current position is not in any danger of being eliminated, nor, if the glowing letter from Mayor Lee is any indication, is Mr. Shoemaker in any danger of being fired. According to the San Francisco Chronicle, Mr. Shoemaker is one of the top 20 earners earning over $100,000 in the mayor's office. His submission of June 22nd clearly states he is part of a dual-income family. What Mr. Shoemaker does not provide to this commission is how his compliance with the limited 12-month lapse between employment as required by the charter will be a financial hardship. Certainly,
ma'am,
his overall household income for those
12
months may be less, but
He's not demonstrated that.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Commissioners, my name is Don Falk, and I'm the executive director of TNDC, Tenderloin Neighborhood Development Corporation, which is an affordable housing developer based here in San Francisco. We are similar to Mercy in terms of being fairly substantial in size compared to most affordable housing developers, but we are different in a couple of respects. One is that Mercy is much larger, and the other is that they are statewide, whereas we are focused on San Francisco. I've been in the field since 1982, and I consider Doug to be a peer of mine, so I want to speak to the issue of how difficult it is to find a job at Doug and my level, which I would characterize as a leadership position for a substantial organization. But before saying that, I do want to note that since I've been working here in 1994, every single mayor who has entered office has hired a new director of his mayor's office of housing. So although we don't know, I think it's fairly likely that he will not be in this position a year from now. I think there are perhaps 20 organizations in the Bay Area who are like TNDC and Mercy. Most of them are smaller than us, so it's a very small universe to begin with. The work of affordable housing is extremely specialized, and then that's even more so when you get to the senior executive level. Of the positions that do exist, and I'm searching my memory and my knowledge, the typical tenure is much more than 10 years, and I can list off. I've been at TNDC for 17 years, the last six as executive director. Chinatown CDC, East Bay Asian Local Development Corporation, Burbank Housing in Santa Rosa, Mercy, MidPen, Todco, all of them have executive directors who have been in their positions for at least 20 years. And so I just came back from a conference a week and a half ago, the Housing Partnership Network, of which Mercy and TNDC are both members of the large, high-performing nonprofits in the United States, and easily two out of three of the executive directors there had been in their positions for longer than 10 years. So there are very few opportunities for, I'll say, Doug or people like me, to enter into similar positions outside of San Francisco. I want to comment briefly on two other things. One is that TNDC has many, many, many times been through the loan committee and loan approval process. And my experience of it is that there are multiple levels of review before it gets to the director. That is, it is vetted by at the staff level. And second, that the loan committee decision is not only made by the director of the mayor's office of housing. MOH represents one out of four seats on that committee that makes the final decision with the redevelopment agency, the Department of Public Health, and the human service agencies also having votes. Thank you.
Good afternoon, David Pilpel. You've heard extensively about Doug and about affordable housing. I think we're all learning more about affordable housing today than we had previously. I've known Doug generally since he served on the Board of Appeals and both as a member of the Board of Appeals and the director of the Mayor's Office of Housing. I think he's dealt with difficult choices for the city and dealt with them very well and fairly. That includes public records disputes and questions of appropriateness and a number of other things that I'm aware of. I think that Doug has demonstrated the hardship that he would face in this particular career choice under the particular circumstances that apply here. So I wanted to actually speak to this commission's discretion in granting or denying a waiver. I think that if you want to have a discussion about what standards have been used in the past, should apply to different types of waivers, because there are a number of different types of waivers that the commission has discretion to grant, I think that would be a good and fine discussion to have, but I don't think today, we certainly don't have the time, we need to be out of here soon, but I think today is not really that place. I think that would be a good discussion to have another time. I think given the past history of generally granting waivers where the circumstances warranted and where there is appropriate evidence before the commission has granted those waivers. And so to conclude, to not grant a waiver in this case, I think would be a significant departure from past practice, would not be fair to Doug, and I think would not speak well of this particular process. The other minor point I would make is, given the hearing 2 weeks ago, it would have been helpful to have the draft minutes from that meeting available, because there are many people who weren't here at the time, and if we had had access to that, that would have been helpful. But otherwise, in summary, I would encourage you to grant the waiver in this case and postpone discussion on the standards to a future meeting. Thank you.
Charlie, for the record, I'm Charles Marsteller, formerly with Common Cause, representing myself today. I just wanted to point out, in keeping with the doctrine of no surprises, that the origin and genesis of this provision of the code is something that I think you need to be aware of. In 2005, I believe we reduced this as a two-year post-employment restriction to a 1 year. So just so that the new commissioners are aware of the fact that there has been, I think, over time some changes in this provision. I don't recall where this provision in the law came from. Obviously, there's a reference in the charter, but I think the fine-tuning must have been done through legislation at the board, because I do not remember an ordinance initiative where this was founded, but perhaps your counsel can clarify that. But I did want to make sure that you were aware that the standard was reduced. That I did notice, though, that Mr. Schumacher's history indicates that most of these contracts that he signed are about 6 months old, and that we're about 6 months away from his not being subject to the violations or the need to seek a waiver in deference to the law, and that is Prop E-2005 COI provisions, I believe, when we updated that section last. So I can see the dilemma you're in. I also know Mr. Schumacher. I've known him since he was on the BOA, or Board of Appeals, Permit Appeals. And I think that was, he's always had a high sense of integrity in the way I've seen him perform his duties. I've never heard or seen any evidence to the contrary. So I do have a good sense of his trustability and integrity as to what he stated here today, as who he is and what his beliefs are and why he wants to continue his service to the people, the city and the county. But that notwithstanding, we have to honor what the public has informed us, and that is that they want consideration of this concern that the public has about the revolving door between the public and private sector. I did want to also say that Mercy is a great honor. If I were appointed executive director of that body, I would be greatly honored. From what I have heard, it's the best going. So I think it would be tragedy for him personally to be denied that position. But let's hope we can work this out.
Any other public comment? Commissioners, any further comments?
I'd like to say one thing. Just to, for the record, to say that my organization is involved in advocacy in the field of affordable housing, but I have never met or worked with Mr. Schumacher personally. The only person who's spoken today on the affordable housing issues whom I have encountered in connection with that work is Ms. Spaulding. But I wouldn't want anyone to, think that I had hesitated to mention that, given the complexities of these issues.
Is there a motion?
I'll move that we grant the waiver that's been requested by Mr. Shoemaker.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
Aye.
You mean no? No, nay.
I have one request. I do think that the suggestion that was made that we put the standards for waivers on our agenda at some point, Mr. Chair, I'm sorry I didn't do it during my time, but doing it outside the context of any particular individual I think would be helpful to us. There are enough questions. I would imagine in the minds of office holders, of people who are considering public office, and of the public, that I think we ought to take a look at the standards and your question, the question of extreme hardship. If you'll indulge me one second, I have lost employees over cross bay commutes, and I've gained employees because they preferred us to organizations otherwise more attractive to them because cross bay commutes were extremely difficult. So leaving aside the respect for this organization or the standard and the issue, I should have said this before we voted, but in a household with school-age children, I think that we have demonstrated in this area that travel and commute can, in fact, reach a standard of hardship and for many people, I've seen extreme hardship in trying to accommodate work and family responsibilities.
Well, I wholeheartedly agree with the suggestion to put on our agenda this issue because I do think the public, city employees who come in and those who are contemplating going out need clarity on this issue. So I agree with that suggestion. That was the only item on our agenda. So is there a motion to adjourn the meeting?
So moved.
Second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Meeting is adjourned.